So Shabbat Shalom, everybody. And let us, if you would, join me, turn to the end of chapter 3 in the book of Deuteronomy, or Bamidbar. Nope, I'm sorry. Devarim, I said it right the first time. Where this week's Parsha begins at about verse 23. I think most of this portion is going to be about a one-verse difference if you've got a Hebrew Bible versus an English Bible there. It says, and I besought Yahuwah at that time. And that word is Vayet Hanan. Sometimes you'll see it rendered, I pleaded. This is Moshe talking, and he says, O Yahuwah Elohim, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For what God is there on heaven and earth that can do according to your works and according to your mighty acts? Now, what's going to happen at this point is he asks one more time, hey, pretty please, can I go over into the good land? Can I see it beyond the Jordan, the hill country, Lebanon? And then he proceeds to tell folks the rest of the story. Well, I got a different answer than I might have wanted. Yahuwah was wroth with me for your sakes, says verse 26. And that one is interesting. I'm not going to comment on it too much because honestly, I don't know that I have an answer. Why is it that Moshe says that he was angry with him? He, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, was angry with him, Moses, for your sakes. He didn't listen to me. Is Moses passing the buck here, not accepting responsibility? That wouldn't seem to be in consistency with his character, but certainly over the years there's been lots and lots of explanations as to what's really going on there. Again, maybe someday we'll get the best one. But the answer he got, again, was clear. Let it suffice you. I do like what Rashi has to say about this. You have so much, is the way he renders the, the inclination of what this is saying. Focus on what you have. Rav, many good things. Let it suffice you. Don't speak to me anymore about this. And then he tells him, go up onto the top of Pisgah, lift up your eyes to the west, to the north, south, and east. Behold, you ain't going over the Jordan, though, but take a look. And at this point, charge Yahshua. Encourage him. Give him some strength. He's the one that's going to go over before his people, and he will cause them to inherit the land. So we abode in the valley against Beth Peor, it says. And now we get into chapter 4. Now, this is where I say, as I sometimes do, hey, this is one of my very favorite Torah portions. And there is a lot of truth in that. But let me try to say it a little bit differently. Verse 1 through literally the rest of this is some of the most intense, some of the most condensed, and of course, I guess you'd have to say important teachings in the entire Torah. We're going to see a number of things in this portion tonight. This concept of obedience comes up in chapter 4. One of the things that I will quote all the time is verse 2. So this is a place I would suggest people memorize, or at least be able to look up when the issue arises. Deuteronomy 4, verse 2. Don't add to or subtract from what it is that I'm giving you. And then what he's going to proceed to give all of us is a reprise of the 10 sayings, the 10 words, Devarim, the 10 commandments in English, as well as some of the other things that are among, again, the great commandment, as it's sometimes called, the primary commandment in all of Scripture. It's the one we do every week here towards the beginning. Deuteronomy chapter 6, the great commandment, Shema Yisrael. Hear, O Israel. Hear and obey, O Israel. So we'll go through all of this in a fair amount of detail, but I wanted to kind of give that outline. And then note this. Moses is, again, speaking directly to the people. Now, here he says, O Israel, hearken. Listen. There's that word. When you see hearken in the King James, it really is Shema. And it's, in this case, it is. It's the literal word. You'll see the Hebrew word Shema in there. Hear and obey these statutes and judgments and commandments, the statutes and the ordinances in this case. And in the Hebrew, remember, those are the two words. I try to make sure that if we're going to learn some Hebrew words, these are good ones. Chuk is the Hebrew word for a statute, something that you just do. And the plural is chukim. So here, hear and hearken unto the chukim, ha chukim, vaet, and also, ha mishpatim, the ordinances, which I teach you. Why? So that you can go and do them. The emphasis is always here on the word do, asah, so that you may live and go and possess this land which Yahuwah, God of your fathers, is giving to you. Then he repeats verse 4-2. I'm repeating it. It says it once here. It's going to say it again at the end of about chapter 12. You are not to add unto the word which I command you, nor are you to diminish from it or subtract from it, that you may keep, again, Shema, the commandments commanding you. This is not an option. This is very strong stuff. Your eyes have seen what happened, what Yodeh Vavheh did in Baal Peor, for the men that followed that fake god, and they have been destroyed from the midst of you. But you that did cleave unto Yahuwah are alive, every one of you this day. Remember, the others fell in the wilderness. Their carcasses didn't make it this far. Behold, he says, I've taught you again, ha-chukim, these statutes, and mishpatim, ordinances, even, this is Moses speaking, as Yahuwah, my Elohim, has commanded me, so that you can go do in the midst of the land this stuff which you are to go and possess. And verse 6 is another one that there's lots of emphasis on in the Midrash. It says in English, observe, there's that word hearken, again, shamar, shamar tem, and do, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, these other peoples. So that when these other folks hear these statutes, they will say, surely, this is a great nation and a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has a God, an Elohim, so nigh unto them as Yahuwah Elohim, our God, is whenever we call upon him? Some of this you'd think would be self-evident. But I do also in this case like Rashi's comment. And this is a very Hebraic mindset. This is the thing I'm going to emphasize, and it's going to show up over and over again in here. It is about doing. And the way he phrased it is, look, the way that you understand what the wisdom is in this line is to recognize it's not just about hearing it. It's not just about learning it. It is about doing it. The eyes of these nations are upon you. People will see not what you say, but they will see what you do. And that is when this wisdom will be apparent. Surely this is a great nation and a wise and understanding people, because they do the things that Elohim, the real one, commands them. So take heed to yourself that you don't forget all these things you saw, lest they depart from your heart. And by the way, make them known to your children's children in the day that you stood before him in Horeb. And then he recounts some of the other things. The mountain burned with fire, and the cloud, and the thick darkness, and Yodeh Vavheh spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You didn't see a form, you only heard a voice. He declared to you his covenant, which he, again, commanded you to perform. And the 10 words, Debarim, that he wrote upon those 2 tablets of stone. And now he has commanded me at that time to teach you, again, these statutes and ordinances. You might do them when you go over to possess this land. So, take heed to yourself. You didn't see any manner of form on the day that he spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. Why is he emphasizing that? Because you didn't see any image. The caution here is, don't you go making any graven images in the form of any figure, the likeness of a male or a female, or any beast in the earth, or winged fowl that flies in the heaven, or the likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, or any fish, anything that swims in the waters under the earth, lest you should lift up your eyes, and when you see the sun and the moon and the stars, all the host of heaven, be drawn away and decide to worship the creation rather than the Creator. It is you who Yodeh Vavheh has taken forth out of the iron furnace, out of Mitzrayim or Egypt, to be unto him a people of inheritance as you are this day. And then he reminds them one more time, Yodeh Vavheh was angered with me for your sakes. He has sworn, I'm not going to go over that river Jordan, but I must die in this land that you're going to go over and possess. So, take heed. Caution, caution. The other day we watched the old movie, Danger, danger, Will Robinson is what the little robot would wave his hands and say. And that's essentially what Moshe is saying. He wants to make it very clear. So there is a lot of repetition in here. Do not do these things. Take heed lest you forget the covenant of Yahuwah Eloheka, which he made with you, and make a graven image. You know, a little man on a cross, even. Or any number of other things that represent something that people can turn their eyes to instead of him and him alone. All of these things are forbidden. He is a devouring fire, a jealous God. When you beget children or your grandchildren, you've been a long time in the land, and you will deal corruptly and make a graven image. He's warning them of what will happen, even the form of anything. And it ends up provoking Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Then he says, listen for the two witnesses. I will call, and I do, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day, that you will soon utterly perish from off that land that you are fixing to go in and possess across the Jordan. You will not prolong your days upon it, but you will utterly be destroyed. Is it becoming more and more clear yet? And Yahuwah, well then, he says, here comes the prophetic part of this, and it's, by the way, something we've seen play out. And we're seeing at least an aspect of this today, too, because we have been scattered. We're still scattered. And Yahuwah will scatter you among the peoples. You'll be left few in number among the nations. We're all of these places that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh will lead you away. And there you will serve other gods, the work of men's hands, wood and stone, things that can neither see. Let's pause for a second. This is another place where sometimes the commentaries have some interesting stuff. What's the real threat here? Because he's just been warning them, don't go serve other gods. Don't do things like making these graven images that will get you lured in to serving other gods. And if you serve other gods, I'm going to kick you out and scatter you. And there you will serve other gods. Well, wait a minute. What kind of a punishment is that? People have been asking for a long, long time. And the answer, at least the way Rashi puts it, and it seems pretty clear, is, look, he's talking about something a little bit more, think about it, think it through. If you end up serving other gods, and you're scattered in the lands of the pagans, people who serve other gods, the real threat is you'll be slaves again to people who serve other gods. So you serve the people who serve the other gods, the work of men's hands. I've delivered you out of bondage and back into bondage. If you will not walk in obedience, you will go. And from there, Moses continues the prophecy here. Then you will seek Yahuwah Eloheka, and you will find him. Seek and you will find him. If you search after him with all your heart and with all your soul, and in your distress, when all of these things are come upon you, in the end of days, will you return unto Yahuwah Eloheka and hearken unto his voice? Now, I've got that underlined in my own scriptures here. People always want to know, are we in the end times? Well, you know, certainly we are. Again, I don't do dates. I'm not trying to predict that we are T-minus a month, T-minus 7 years, or 70 years, or anything of the sort. We begin to see the cycles within cycles. I have no doubt that if we know the times and the seasons, we can see certain things coming to a head. It's the end of certain things, like the almighty fiat dollar, and arguably even the end of the American Empire and a number of other things. Does that mean it's the final end days? Not necessarily. But when I read this in context, I guess there is some cause to take heart. Let's read it again, see if it doesn't make sense if we go slow. In your distress, says Moshe. Now, this is after he's already called heaven and earth to witness. You're going to perish from the land. You're going to get kicked out. You'll be scattered. Check, check. We're there. People are serving other gods. No doubt about it. In your distress, when all of these things are come upon you, in the end of days. Well, I'll ask it as a question. Are we there? If we're there, then here comes the good news. When these things are come upon you, in the end of days, then you will return. Teshuvah, to Yahuwah Eloheka, the Lord your God, and hearken unto his voice. Now, to my mind, that's probably one of the most encouraging things in the whole portion. If, in fact, these are the end of days, then we will return. If it's not quite the end of days, then maybe people won't hearken as much as they ought to. That's not nearly as encouraging. But it is good to know that the closer we get to the end of days, the closer we are to this place where it says, yes, people will return to him and hearken to his voice. For he is merciful. He will not fail you, nor destroy you, nor forget the covenant of your fathers, which he swore unto them. For now, of days past, which were before you, since the day that Elohim created man upon the earth and from one end of heaven to the other, has there been anything? Have you heard anything like what we're talking about now? Did a people ever hear the voice of Elohim speaking out of the midst of the fire as you, the folks that he's talking to today, have heard and live? All of these things that you've been shown, he says, they're so you might know one simple fact, that he is Elohim. There is none else beside him. Out of heaven, he made you to hear his voice that he might instruct you. He made you to see this great fire and out of the midst of the fire. And because he loved your fathers and he chose their seed after him, he brought you out with his presence and with his great power out from Mitzrayim or Egypt. And he's driven, he has driven and he will continue to drive these nations out from before you. By the way, they're intelligent, they are powerful, they're mightier, they're bigger. There's more of them than you. But he's going to nevertheless bring you in to give you their land for an inheritance, as it is in this day. So know this day, and lay it to your heart, that Yahuwah, he is Elohim. In heaven above and upon the earth beneath, there is none else. What does that mean? We're going to hear it again one more time. And you shall keep his statutes, hukim, and his commandments, mishpatim, and also in this case it's mitzvotin, his commandments, that he is again commanding this day, so that it will go well with you and with your children afterwards, and you will prolong your days upon the land, which he is giving to you forever. And then he tells us that Moses separated three cities beyond the Jordan towards the sunrise. These are another three cities of refuge. Bezer in the wilderness for the Reubenites, Ramoth in Gilead for the Gadites, and Golan in Bashan for the folks that are of the half-tribe of Manasseh. And then verse 44 says, and this is the Torah, the instruction, which Moshe set before the children of Israel. Here we get a couple other words. Here, these are the testimonies, and it's ha Edat, the statutes and the ordinances, again, though that word is hukim and mishpatim, hamishpatim, which Moses spoke to the children of Israel when they came forth out of Mitzrayim, out of Egypt. Let's go into chapter 5. Now, this is one that everybody, I guess if you're looking for some verses to kind of try to commit to memory or at least remember, I always had trouble with this, where these things are. Well, one of them, the first time we see the Ten Commandments is in Exodus chapter 20, and we're going to get them right here in Deuteronomy chapter 5 again. Moshe called unto all Israel, Kol Israel, and he said to them, Shema Israel, hear, O Israel. Again, the statutes and the ordinances which I speak in your ears this day. Why? So that you may learn them and observe to do them. Hear, obey, learn, do. Verse 2 says, Yahuwah has cut, the King James says made, but I like the word cut in there. That really is the Hebrew word. It's karat, cut a covenant, a brit, with us in Horeb. I won't go into a lot of detail on the word, but if you think about cutting a covenant, you've ever seen any of the demonstrations, remember what Abraham did. He literally cut some pieces. And there is a cutting that is involved in making a covenant. We're going to see this word appear again in a little while too, which is part of the reason I wanted to mention it here. The Lord, Yahuwah, has not cut this covenant with our fathers, but with us. All of us who are here alive this day. He spoke with you face to face in the mountain out of the midst of the fire. And I stood before him and you at that time to declare unto you the Debarim, the words, the word of Yahuwah. You were afraid on that particular day when you heard all this stuff, here comes the repetition. Saying, Ani, or it's actually in this case, it's Anki, I am, Yod Hey Vav Hey, Eloheka. Anki, Yahuwah, Eloheka. I am, says the English, the King James, I am the Lord your God. Well, really, his name is given. Anki, Yahuwah, Eloheka. Who brought you up out of the land of Egypt, out of the hand, the land of the house of bondage, you shall have no other mighty ones before my face. And the face. He repeats again, verse 7. You're not to make a graven image, not anything that's in the heavens above, earth below, or the waters beneath the earth. You're not to bow down to them, nor serve them. For Ani, Yahuwah, I am Yod Heh Vav Heh, your Elohim, and I'm a jealous Elohim, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto the thousands, and the thousand generation is the way it's often rendered. I'll admit, sometimes it's thousands, and sometimes the word generation may be in there, but I like the idea that it could be the thousandth generation, because we're not anywhere close to that yet. Of them that love me, and... When you see the word and, always remember it. It's a combination, and it's important that we do both things. A, love him, and B, keep, shamar, my commandments. Verse 10 says, you're not to take the name of... Does this mean you're not to say the GD word? I know it offends people, otherwise I'd say it, because I don't think it means squat to say GD out loud. Again, it's offensive to folks, so I don't do it. But on the other hand, that is not what it's talking about. Most people think his name is God. That's not his name. There are all kinds of fake mighty ones, gods many. He has a name. And when the scriptures talk about his name, it is the tetragrammaton, Yod Heh Vav Heh. You are not to take the name of Yod Heh Vav Heh Eloheka in vain. He won't hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. And remember, when we talk about his name too, there is a bigger aspect to this, and it's got to do with his character. Impugning his character. Defaming his character. Verse 11. Hear, do, keep, observe. Everybody knows what the Hebrew word is there, I hope. It's shamar. Shamar et yom ha-shabbat. Observe, keep, do, set aside the Sabbath day. To keep it kadosh, as Yahuwah Eloheka has commanded you. And that word, their command, by the way, is zah. Let's see. My handwriting is hard to read. It literally means to command, to charge, to give an order. This is not an option. It's always interesting to me that we have so many Christian denominations today that say, oh, well, you know, the only thing that really matters out of the whole Old Testament is the Ten Commandments. And what have we're only to about the fourth one here. And we've already blown away most of them out of that whole set. For one, certainly when it comes to, let's just say, a number of denominations, this part about graven images gets pretty well ignored. And you're not to take the name of God in vain. Well, if you don't even know what his name is, and if you deny his character by ignoring what he wrote and said do all of this time, isn't that pretty well taking his name in vain? And besides which, his name is not God anyway. So we've pretty well trashed that one. And if we don't understand we're talking about his character and we're impugning his character by not doing what he says, well... Not so good there. And then how about that Sabbath day? The one that he says, this is a command. Hear, obey, do, keep, separate, make it set apart. Well, no, we don't do that one either. We got Sun God Day. Constantine said to keep that, and we seem to honor him more than the creator of the universe. At least we know Constantine's name. We call him by the name. We don't call him a false god. Some of this stuff, folks... I guess as I'm going through it, I think we really need to emphasize it, and that's the key. All of this stuff is important. He starts out this chapter 4 by saying, Don't add to or subtract from. And already we've got a lot of Christian denominations that have completely trashed a bunch of them. Oh, well, you know, the only ones that really matter are the ones that were repeated in the New Testament. Where do you get that? Where does he say that? What he says is, I'm going to repeat all this stuff over and over again, so maybe I can get it through your stiff-necked and thick skulls. And if that's not clear, we got a little bit more information about his Sabbath. 6 days you shall work, do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath unto Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Eloheka. In it, you're not to do any manner of work, not you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your animals, not your ox, or your ass, or any of your cattle, not even the stranger that dwells within your gates. Have we left anything out? So that your manservant, your maidservant may rest too, just like you. And by the way, you are to remember. This is a slight difference than the one we get in chapter 20 of Exodus, by the way. You remember, you're a servant, you were a servant in the land of Mitzrayim. And that Yahuwah Eloheka brought you up out of there by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and therefore he commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. The explanation that goes with this, and I have no reason to deny it at all, is these people were in bondage in Mitzrayim in Egypt. They were in cruel bondage to another so-called god, Pharaoh. And the point is, Elohim has selected them, delivered them, brought them out of bondage so that they can serve him. That's us, so that we can serve him. To my mind, that seems like a relatively, that's a great trade. As Paul wrote a long time later, that's your reasonable service if he did all this stuff. Now, I'm not going to dwell on too much of the patterns in here tonight, but I think at least a couple of the comments that that show the depth of, I guess you'd have to say, wonder that's in these Devarim is worth pointing out. By the way, it's also worth pointing out that if you go to the various denominations, even among Judaism, Rabbinic Judaism, as opposed to Catholicism and so forth, well, again, we've got this preference. Different denominations will ignore some, renumber others. One of the things that I usually point out as I'm going through here, I do like a way that a good friend of mine who is a rabbi likes to teach this, and it's a more Jewish understanding. He says, really, of course, he's not unique in this because it's been taught this way for centuries. The first commandment, if you will, the first saying is, Anki Yahuwah Eloheka. I am. And they may say Hashem, because they reverence the name, they won't say it. I will say it, Anki Yahuwah Eloheka. And ultimately, because there's no punctuation in the Hebrew, you could put a period there. The key thing is to know, just know, that I am who I say I am. So if you can already, before we even get through the end of what is so often called the first commandment, we can begin to see how people can count these things differently. Matter of fact, sometimes the more traditional understanding is just the commandments, Devarim. How many of them are there? The sayings? It really doesn't matter. What matters is we're supposed to hear and learn and obey and ultimately do all of these things. However, having said all of that, isn't it interesting that they were put onto two tablets? Why two tablets? Well, what we're taught, and I don't object to this too much, is these are really kind of broken into these two sections. First one has to do with the things that a man is to do to Elohim. And the second set is how men are to deal with one another. So you got five and five. Five on the first tablet, five on the second tablet. Well, that's all well and good, except for when we get to number five here, which is where we're at least supposedly looking at here. This would have been the last commandment on the first of the tablets. Honor your father and your mother, as Yahuwah Eloheka has commanded you, that your days may be long. This is the commandment that has a blessing, and that it may go well with you upon the land which Yahuwah Eloheka is giving to you. Well, that one kind of breaks the pattern a little bit, doesn't it? All these other ones are saying, here is what God expects the Almighty, the Creator, of you. Don't make a graven image. I am. Have no other Elohim before my face. All of those very clearly apply to him, but this one doesn't seem to. Honor your father and mother. There's a blessing in that for you. I saw a rendering of this that I think is a pretty good way of understanding. Hey, you know what? Your parents are kind of, and this is a nice transition, your parents are kind of like a creator too. They made you. That's why we honor our parents. The first five of these things, in other words, are literally about honoring the creator and those things that the Creator, by implication, is teaching us. And this honor that we have for him is to extend to our parents as a, you know, an image, created in the image of him. And also, they had a hand in creating us. I think it's an interesting way to put it. Because at least at the end of this segment, now we get to the second segment where all of a sudden there is a... this change. Lo tartzach. Tirtzach. Thou shalt not murder. Lo means not, and literally what's written out is just not murder. Period. Not murder. Not adultery. Not steal. Don't do those things. These are very simple two-word commands. Is there a pattern here? Well, again, it's another way of phrasing it is we've got these things that have to do with our duty towards Creator, the Creator singular, and those who are kind of surrogates operating in a similar mode on his behalf. So man to our Creator, if you will. And in the second case, peer-to-peer, how men are to deal with, and that's the royal both genders, with one another. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness against your neighbor.
I like Derek Yahoo's comment, vertical and horizontal.
Yeah, vertical and horizontal. It's another way of looking at it. I mentioned there are all kinds of patterns, and I wasn't going to spend a lot of time going through the patterns, but certainly things that you'll see. I've spent some time in the past talking about the bookends within Scripture. Compare the first and the last, for example, or the first and the last in a segment. We got two tablets. How about the first and the first? In other words, the first commandment on the first tablet and the first commandment on the second tablet and the second and the second. Are there any similarities, anything in the pattern there we can see? Well, an obvious one kind of sticks out at us when we get to not murder. What does don't murder have to do with ani or anki Yahuwah Eloheka? I am the Lord your God. I'm going to part company from some of the teachings on this and just say, well, he is literally, he is who he says he is. And if there's a single attribute, I think, that to my mind anyway, is the essence of who he is the life force. Without him, there would be no life, period. There certainly wouldn't be any life in us. We're made in his image. What is it that that really literally exemplifies his creation, his love for us, his having given us all these things? Well, choose life, to my mind, comes as close as an understanding of what it is we are to do. All of these other things are details about how we do that. If he is the essence of life itself, and he is who he says he is, I am, doesn't it make sense that we shouldn't destroy those things that are created in his image? In other words, choose life and not death? And it looks to me like, at least in terms of the pattern, lo tirt zach falls right out of that. Don't commit murder. Don't commit adultery. Well, the pattern is pretty well obvious if you look at that one. Don't make a graven image. Don't have any other gods before me. What's the consistent scripture and adultery? Well, you know, in a spiritual and a physical sense, they're literally mirror images of one another. So you can begin to see how these things play out and the patterns that are there. But I'm more interested tonight in just making sure that we understand that the real emphasis here is on this idea of teach, obey, do. Practice. In other words, by your actions, show that you are His, that you're walking in obedience to Him. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, don't bear false witness against your neighbor. And then finally we get to verse 17. Don't covet your neighbor's wife, nor anything that your neighbor has. There's a list here. Don't covet your neighbor's wife, nor his house, nor his field, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, his ox, his ass, presumably by implication any of his other animals, or anything that is your neighbor's. The key word here, the tough word that people kind of stumble over a lot, is covet. Does that mean I can't look at my neighbor's wife? I avert my eyes. Well, some have no doubt in history gone that far. I don't think that's what's being talked about. Can't look at the neighbor's house. Can't go over and visit the neighbor's house and say, "Hey, Bill, this is a great place you got here." There's a difference, in other words, between, your wife is a beautiful woman. Hey, she's a great cook, too. Nothing wrong with admiring or appreciating the things that the neighbor has. The problem seems to be when we don't quite understand what this word covet means. And in other places, you'll see similar words that get rendered as lust for. In other words, literally, I can picture an Ebenezer Scrooge type, wringing your hands. Ah, yeah, my pretty, I want that. There's a line, and it ought to be pretty clear, between simply saying, okay, this is a beautiful place you got here. Hey, that's a nice car you've got there. I would very much like to have one like it. Hey, it's good mileage, it's been reliable, and so forth, as opposed to, I want yours, the one that you got. No, that's the one I want. And that, in turn, leads to thought precedes action. Again, it's all about doing. And in this case, the word covet is particularly interesting because all of the other things in here are talking about doing. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't commit murder. Later on, we see that Shaul writes, take every thought captive in obedience to him. I think the key thing and the difference that this last one is pointing out is we do have to be careful. Just as words can kill. And if the creator of the universe can speak the world into existence, we need to understand that if thought precedes action too, it is important. It's not the same as doing. But in this case, the act of coveting is in fact a doing. Is that clear? I hope that's as clear as I can make it. In other words, it's not necessarily something, but it certainly can be. That's physically obvious. And I think most of us, if we all step back and think about it, can understand that. We can see a difference between somebody who is admiring of a wife or a house or some animals or a car or anything that the neighbor might have, and one who is lusting or coveting it in such a way that literally we're only a step or so removed from plotting how to get it, how to steal it. And that's the key. By the way, if you go back and you read in some of the places that I'll often talk to, don't really have time tonight, from the apostolic writings, some of the teachings of Yeshua, where he talks about, lusting for the neighbor's wife in your house and already committed adultery. What he is talking about is this last of the Deborim. In other words, at the point where you commit this act of lusting, that is where the real act has been committed. You've already committed, if you will, adultery in your heart. because the action consists of passing or crossing that line. All right, these words, says Moshe. By the way, if there's any questions, I should have mentioned this earlier, but if questions, we can take a look at those and comment. I know that the 10 Deborim are things that people have heard probably many, many times. And, well, if there wasn't some value in repetition, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. It is good to hear these things repeated. He emphasizes many, many times in this one portion alone that it's about shamar, hear and obey, do. Because we do need to hear. We need to hear it repeated. We get the Ten Commandments essentially twice for similar reasons. So all of these words that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh spoke unto you in the midst of the fire, out of the cloud, the thick darkness, with a great voice, it went on. And he wrote these things on two tablets of stone, said Moshe, and he gave them to me. And behold, he has shown you his glory and his greatness. We've heard his voice. So, why should we die? Why should we die? They were asking, basically, Moshe, well, you know, this is really scary stuff. He is scary. We want something different. Who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living Elohim speaking out of the midst of the fire as we have and lived? So go near and hear all that he might say. And by the way, do what? Hear it, Shema, and do it. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh heard the voice of your words. And when you spoke unto me, and he said unto me, I've heard the voice of the people which they have spoken unto you, and they have well said all that they have spoken. Go back to your tents. I'll stand here. I'll speak to you all the commandments. And then, by the way, they can go in the land and possess it. So you are to observe, therefore, as Yahuwah has commanded you, do not turn aside to the right nor to the left and walk in the way that he has, again, commanded you, so that you might live, go in, it's well with you, prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. Now, chapter 6 is where we get to the other one that we've already talked about at least once tonight, and it too. Again, often called the royal commandment, the single thing that Yahushua pointed out, ultimately the key, the great commandment. Chapter 6 says, now, this is the commandment, the statutes, the ordinances, which Yahuwah has commanded to teach you, again, so that you might go into the land and do these things and fear him, keep his statutes, which I command you, and, one more time, your son, your son's son, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Can you see the pattern of repetition? Hear, therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with you, and you can increase mightily. Go into this land flowing with milk and honey. And then in verse 4, and I'm going to read it. It's the one we do every week in Hebrew. It says, Shema Yisrael, Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad. They have to add Yahuwah Eloheika. They call Levavka. They call Nefeshka. They call Meodeka. Hear, O Israel, Yahuwah, your Elohim, Yahuwah is Echad. Love him with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I command you shall be in your heart. Teach them diligently to your children. Speak of them. Talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Bind them upon your hand. Let them be frontlets between your eyes. Write them upon the mezuzah, the doorposts of your house, and on your gates. So it shall be when Yahuwah, your God, brings you into this land which he has sworn to your fathers to give you. There'll be great cities there, which you didn't build. Houses full of all good things, which you didn't fill up. Cisterns, which you didn't hew. Vineyards and olive trees, things you didn't plant. And all of this stuff you will have, and you'll eat from, and you'll be satisfied. But, there's always a but, right? Beware, lest you forget just who it was brought you forth out of the land of Mitzrayim, out of the house of bondage. So, fear him. Serve him. And by his name alone, you shall swear. Do not go after those other Elohim, the mighty ones of the peoples round about you. Verse 15 says, for he is a jealous God. He's in the midst of you. Don't let his anger be kindled against you, because he can destroy you from off the face of the earth. Do not try Yahuwah Eloheku as you tried him in Massah, the place where there was the first place in Exodus 17, we see no water. Moshe then smote the rock. What are you supposed to do instead? Diligently keep his commandments, his testimonies, his statutes, which he has commanded you. And do. Does it sound like I'm being repetitious? You bet. Because he is. This is the thing that somehow or other I just can't quite relate. I remember years ago beginning to come out of the Exchin Church, and I've mentioned this last week. I've got friends that have said, hey, you know, Mark, sometimes you're really hard on Exchianity, on the denominational church, talking about how they teach that the law is done away with and the Old Testament is old. I don't like that word, Old Testament, for that reason. Or even the New Testament. It's basically a covenant that men break and that he keeps refining and finding ways for us not to be destroyed. Hey, he knew the end from the beginning. And in spite of that, we cannot seem to manage to do the simplest things. So it irritates me, yeah, I'll admit it, at a really basic level. And I've had people ask me, not long ago, why do you teach from the Old Testament? What? Because it's important, damn it! Because he never changed it, not one yod or tittle. And how many times does he have to say, Shema, 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 hear, obey, do! For crying out loud, lest you forget Yahuwah. Lest you serve other gods, like Ishtar. And these other fake Elohim, born on December the 25th, and celebrated with bunnies and eggs and all kinds of other stuff that are abomination. Do you think just for a second that if we don't listen and won't obey him and will not do and teach our children and our children's children that everything Moses was talking about here hasn't happened? For crying out loud. So yeah, when he says do over and over and over and over again, and when he says over and over again, here's the commandment, the statutes, the ordinances, do these things so that you might live, you and your children. And don't try him like you did before, and like you did again and again and again and again and again. You can read it in Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah and Hosea and you name it. Same story. And then he says again, diligently keep what? His statutes, his judgments, his commandments, his hukim, his mishpatim, his mitzvotim. All of these things which he has said, pretty please do? No, he has commanded. Do, do, do. That it might be well with you. All of these things, these people that are being dispossessed from the land, didn't do. What's going to happen now? Well, Kol Israel is going to go into the land and thrust all of these enemies out from before you, just as he's spoken. When the Son comes to you in the time to come and says, what do all these things mean, these testimonies and statutes and ordinances, which Yahuwah Eloheinu, our God, has commanded? Well, then you're to say to him, well, here's the story. We were bond servants, bondmen. We were slaves, literally, of Pharaoh in Mitzrayim, Egypt. And he brought us out. Yod-Heh-Rav-Heh, not some fake god. The creator of the universe brought us out with a mighty hand. We know the story. He showed signs and wonders upon Pharaoh, all of his house. He brought us out. He has now given us this land which he swore to our fathers. And he, it says here, commanded us to do, there's that word again, all of these statutes, hukim, to fear Yahuwah Eloheka for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. And it is to be righteousness. There's that word, by the way, zadek, or ve zadecha, to us. If we will observe to do all of this commandment before Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, as he has commanded us. I can't make it any more clear than he has. The pattern, he's commanded us. Why should we do it? Well, a bunch of reasons, but basically because he said so. And he hasn't changed it, not once. Chapter 7. This is where we're going to see something else that is kind of one of my my hot buttons. Why? Because I believe very strongly it's one of his hot buttons. It says in verse 1, when Yahuwah Eloheka has brought you into this land that you're going in to possess, and you're going to cast out a whole bunch of nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, Hivites, the Jebusites, and the Mosquitobites is Brad Scott's joke, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. On paper, at least. It looks like, you know, the way to handicap the football game is they're going to outscore you. Not just on points, but on, you know, beef on the hoof. They're bigger. There's more of them. But when Yahuwah Eloheka is going to deliver them up before you, you shall smite them. And you shall utterly destroy them. Then what? Well, here's that word cut again. Tikharat. You are to make, it says in English, but I like the word cut. You are to cut no covenant with them. Make no treaty with the inhabitants of the land, is another way it's sometimes put. Nor show mercy upon them. Oh, by the way, don't let you your daughters or your sons marry off to them either. You're not to make marriages with them. Your daughter shall not be given unto his son, nor his daughter to your own son. Oh, gee, that sounds politically incorrect nowadays. Why? Because if you do that, he will turn away your son from following me. And you'll end up serving these other gods. And what will be the result? You will kindle the anger of the Almighty. And he'll destroy you quickly. Then it says this in verse 5. Now this too is one of those things that I think is important. And there are commandments in Scripture against mixing. But if we're asking the question, and I'm, as you know, I'm being a little bit more blunt here. Because when it comes to Shabbat, and when it comes to the things that we're to teach our children, this is what he's telling us. Teach your children. Do you think the idea of not letting them intermarry, because what? Because they will eventually follow after these other gods. These gods that we are to, let's just say, not mess with, is important. Well, verse 5 makes it about as clear as you can make it, although he's going to try several different ways to make it even more clear so that there is no doubt, I guess you could say, so that we're without excuse, why it is that we don't keep Halloween or Christmas or Ishtar or any of these other fake goddess or God-inspired things. Here is how you are to deal with them, he says. This is pretty clear. You are to break down their pillars. I won't go through it here, but I've gone through the Hebrew. I think these Hebrew words are interesting. And what you'll see is in the English translations, you get a lot of different renderings of the words. Break down, dash in pieces, smash them, crash them, bash them, dash them, destroy them utterly, burn them with fire. Do you kind of catch the pattern here? You're just supposed to basically whack them, sack them, and destroy them in every way you can imagine. Verse 5, here's how this particular English rendering goes. This is how you're to deal with them. You shall break down their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, hew down their asherim, their phallic tree groves, and burn their graven images with fire. Pretty clear. Because you are a set apart people. Kadosh unto Yahuwah Eloheka. He has chosen you to be his own treasure out of all the peoples on the face of the earth. This is not, he says, he did not set his love on you nor choose you because you were more in number than any people. Indeed, you were the fewest of all peoples. But because Yahuwah loved you, because he would keep the oath which he swore unto your fathers, he brought you out with a mighty hand, redeemed you out of the house of bondage from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, this is another one of those places, too, where almost seems like if you look at Scripture, we get a contrast. Remember, Abraham was told, your seed will be like the stars in the sky and numbered without end eventually. And in fact, what we've got going into the land is a whole lot of people. Millions, anyway. 2 million, 3 million. Most of the estimates that scholars seem to pin their ideas on are several million people, maybe three. I tend to think that three is probably about the right number. 600,000, plus or minus, of men able to go to battle in those ages. And certainly you know there were more women and children by a lot than that. Now that's a lot of folks. But it's evidently not as many as were in these other nations. and these other ones were big ones. But that's not the point. There's more of you than there were, clearly, when 70 went into the land, or thereabouts. But there's less of you than there are of them. The point is here, it's not about numbers. And of course, the battle is going to bear that out too. So know, therefore, that Yahuwah, your Eloheka, he is. He is who he says he is. He is Elohim. The faithful Elohim, who keeps the covenant and has mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. There's that key thing. It's not enough just to say you love him. What? Is this a departure from the ex-gen church? I guess I'm going to have to say yeah. He is faithful to those who keep covenant. He keeps his covenant. But it's important that we both love him and keep his commandments. He is faithful to those to 1,000 generations. He repays those that hate him, though, to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack to them that hate him. He will repay him to his face. Now that, I'm going to just pause on for a second and let that sit there and ask yourself the question. We'll talk about the news in a minute here. It would seem to me that there are some comeuppances due for those that hate him, that they're going to get repaid to their face. So then what? Well, we've heard this before. Keep the commandments and the statutes and the ordinances, hamitzvot, the chukim, and hamishpatim, which I command you this day. And here we end the portion. You can say it with me, right? To do them. It's about doing. Okay. Let's pause there, and we'll have another song. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of the other aspects of things we see in the news and how all of this, ultimately, fairly simple stuff. Here are my statutes, my judgments, my commandments, my instruction, in the broadest sense. If you love me, keep my commands. John 14:15, do those things. It's not hard.